This is Moe and McGee on Fantasy.
Listeners, welcome back. We have a strategy theme here on Moe and McGee on Fantasy. Buy and sell, war room. Might even put one on the board. Been trying to put one on the board every week. We'll see if Moe bites.
Yeah, we'll see, Kevin. Let's start with buy and sell. Trades should be heating up in your league as teams have really found out kind of who they are. And I think week four is a good barometer now. You've seen four games. You kind of know who your players are. There's been some big injuries. This is where you can maybe take advantage of players that have either outperformed their expectations or maybe have been underperforming and you can, buy low. Let's start with TJ Hockenson, though, who a lot of injuries in Detroit. I believe they were out their top two wide receivers and without DeAndre Swift. So TJ Hockenson goes off for 36 points, was tight end one on the week. Are you selling or buying?
Not just 36 points, 39.9 points.
Oh, sorry, Kevin. I undersold it even.
Which is territory that 40-point territory is usually reserved for Kelce and Andrews, which is very intriguing. However, you hit it on the head. A lot of injuries in Detroit to make that happen. Really favorable game script to make that happen. Detroit will lead at some point this season, and not just by 3 points. I think Hockenson, if you can get him at, tight end five value, go out and buy him. Otherwise, I'm looking to sell. Cash in on a huge week that is probably not sustainable from here on out.
Yeah, the problem with that, Kevin, is what's your tight end spot going to look like if you go off of TJ Hockenson? There's not many other tight ends that can do what he did this last week. We saw it last year. He had a few of these games, just not as consistent as you'd like, obviously. But would you rather have that upside in your tight end spot or like a low end consistency? Let me throw a name. I'll throw a name to it. A guy like Logan Thomas, he's going to get you like 30-ish yards, four catches, 7 points probably every week with like one touchdown upside. Like the most he's ever going to get you is like maybe 20 points, but he's going to settle into that like 10-point range most weeks. Or would you rather have TJ Hockenson, who can explode for 40? Obviously, it depends on who you're trading for, but kind of where are you at as far as like a hold for TJ Hockenson?
Yeah, so I would be happy with Logan Thomas kind of filling in, locking down the tight end spot. The logic for doing that trade, obviously I'd prefer to have TJ Hockenson, but the logic for doing that trade is you're upgrading another position, presumably. So if you flip TJ Hockenson for Logan Thomas and then upgrade your RB2 position to a high-end RB2 instead of a low-end RB2, I like that trade a lot.
Yeah, that's kind of my reasoning. I think if you give up the upside of TJ Hockenson, you can probably safely fill in that consistency role on the tight end. There's so many tight ends that are not stars, but usable. That's kind of where the position is right now. And I think if you can sucker someone into thinking TJ Hockenson is a superstar after this last week, you should absolutely do that. So probably a sell for both of us. Josh Jacobs, he's had a really nice start. I believe he's RB6 on the season, Kevin. I want to say six or higher. Had a really big week this last week.
Yeah, RB7. So right there.
There you go. I was close.
A few names ahead of him that I don't expect to stay there. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Jamal Williams. The thing with Josh Jacobs is the Raiders have tried to run the ball for years and haven't been able to until this year. I don't believe that they will continue to run the ball at the rate that they've been able to. I think that his production will fall off. I think he's been consistent enough through the first 4 weeks that if you can flip him for Aaron Jones, if you can flip him for even, you know, Damian Pierce, or I'd really like to get Joe Mixon or Leonard Fournette, might be a tougher sell. But I would like to pivot away from Josh Jacobs if I had the chance. That being said, I think low end RB1 is where I'm ranking them right now. I'm looking to try to hopefully get something a little bit higher than that if you're doing a trade.
Yeah, so this last week against Denver, he had 33 touches. The most he had in any of the other three games was 20. So this was a considerable workload bump for him in a game that, you know, was kind of back and forth. I think he's a nice RB2. If someone values him more than a nice RB2, you should absolutely do that trade. I, for one, across the board in most of my fantasy leagues, if I had Josh Jacobs, I'd probably be holding him because there's not too many guys who are going to get around 20 touches a game. And so that's kind of that valuable, you know, kind of what I said about Melvin Gordon in episode one, just kind of a touchdown dependent volume based RB2. And sometimes that's not bad. So I would definitely be exploring trades that include Josh Jacobs, especially if you're in a place where you probably don't have to draft him very high. You might have some better running backs. He could be your second or third running back and cash him in for a wide receiver too, high end. You know me, Kevin. I want as many wide receivers as I can get. I want to start three every week. And so if you're in a place where you're finding yourself having to start, you know, a third running back in your flex, it'd be a good time to cash Josh Jacobs in and, you know, move that flex running back into your RB2 and put a good wide receiver in your flex.
Another running back that's been playing, you know, moderately well so far this season, probably outperforming expectations, is Devin Singletary, who has surprisingly, at least surprisingly in my opinion, seen some receiving upside. Is that something that you look to continue and is a buy, or it might be something that might be early season phenomenon and you're looking to cash in and get out of the Devin Singletary market?
Yeah, it depends on what you think of James Cook, really, doesn't it? If you think James Cook can carve out a role, I feel like his role would be that receiving back. Seems like they've been leaning on the veterans, Singletary and Zach Moss, to be the running backs right now. I'm going to trust and hold on to Devin Singletary as long as you can. You probably didn't give up much draft capital for him, and he's been paying off over ADP quite a bit so far. As long as I don't see James Cook on the field, I feel confident putting Devin Singletary, you know, in my RB2 or flex spot.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat. Sean McDermott said that they think that instead of using the running back as a traditional rusher and plodding through the middle, that they can really utilize short passes and use that as kind of a pseudo running situation, which bodes really well in PPR formats. I do think that teams don't typically use a second round pick on a running back like James Cook and then not use him. However, Devin Singletary isn't under contract for next season. Zach Moss will be entering in the last year of his deal. I think James Cook might be more of a next year guy, and I would be heavily interested in trying to acquire Devin Singletary. I think, especially in PPR leagues, I think this passing passing work is going to continue, and he's been effective with it so far, and that's money at the RB2 spot.
Absolutely, for sure. And you know, you kind of mentioned it. He would be, you know, a good, you don't love saying this, but a kind of a buy high guy, where maybe the person who drafted him, you know, still thinks of him as that round seven-ish, eight-ish selection, where now, you know, if we knew the role in week five, he'd be drafted in round four, in round five. So maybe you can catch an owner sleeping, especially like kind of like I just mentioned with Josh Jacobs. The owner didn't have to spend high, so he might have a couple other running backs that he likes. Try to take him up on that.
Absolutely.
Who's the last guy we're going to talk about, Kevin?
Last guy we're going to talk about was drafted a little bit higher. Terry McLaurin for the Washington Commanders. A little bit of a slow start if you're a Scary Terry fan. But Jahan Dotson is banged up. Do you think Terry McLaurin starts to take some work from Curtis Samuel, starts to pick up some of that Jahan Dotson work, or is he just worse than we thought he was going to be?
Yes, last week was really bad, Kevin. 2 catches, 15 yards. However, if you go back to the first 3 weeks, 13 points, 12 points, 16 points, you're probably a little underwhelmed, but that's not bad. It's certainly usable. He does have about like a 20-ish% target share, which as far as wide receiver twos go, it's pretty good. With Jahan Dotson going down, I am pretty big on Terry McLaurin. This would be a huge buy low for me off his worst week of the season. I'm all in on Terry McLaurin, was all in on him, in the preseason. And I think this is more of a mirage with the way the Redskins are playing. I feel like they're going to be in a lot of throwing situations. They have a pretty light schedule as far as passing matchups. I'm in on Terry McLaurin. One thing that does scare me just a little bit is he is going to get locked up by the best cornerback. Anytime they face, a shutdown guy, he's going to get shadowed, which I think Curtis Samuel, if you got him, he's going to be money for the rest of the season just because of that, I think.
Yeah, Curtis Samuel is the one scariest spot for me. Ron Rivera has had an infatuation with Curtis Samuel dating back to their time together on the Panthers. I think he's going to continue to be worked in a lot of different ways, and you're not going to see it probably in the backfield with Brian Robinson coming back. I think that'll be full between Antonio Gibson, J.D. McKissick, and Brian Robinson. So you're going to see it all on the outside. That being said, if you can get Terry McLaurin for what I think is a 14-point per game player, a plus flex player, a very playable wide receiver two player, that's where I'm ranking him. And if you can get him for cheaper than that, get him. If the price is a little bit higher than that, then I'm looking to sell.
Well, there you go, Kevin. Let's hop down to the war room. I had a question for you. We were just talking about trades, the buys and sells. We've been in a lot of trade negotiations, me and you, not necessarily with each other, but with other people. We probably both send out more trade requests than about anybody you guys know. Usually there's a wall, Kevin. There's a wall that's built. The wall is generally that people spent draft capital on these players, whether they're performing well, whether they're performing poorly, they value them a little higher. Do you have any advice to me and to the listeners? I might have a little talking point after you go, but is there any way that you break through that wall?
Yeah. Players, after you draft somebody or acquire them and they've been on your team, you kind of develop a sense of this is my guy. And you just subconsciously feel that they're worth more than they actually are. And I think the easiest way to break down that wall is you have to reach out and text somebody. If you don't have their number, you have to go out and find them on Facebook and send them a goddamn Facebook message or something. Open up the conversation, because a lot of times when those trades pop into people's fantasy notifications, this guy's just trying to fuck me over. He's throwing out this dumb little trade. If you open up the conversation and say, hey, this is what I'm thinking, this is why I'm thinking it works for both of us, it seems more legitimate. It seems more genuine. Even if it's not the trade that you first had in mind, you can start busting it down, or breaking it up, mix and matching, figuring out where you guys do align on some ideas, and you know, hopefully land on a trade that makes sense for both of you, or in some cases just a trade that you outright win on, which is the best case scenario.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's trying to win a trade, and it usually happens. There's not many win-win trades that ever happen in fantasy football. One thing that I like to do usually is there's so many different trade value rankings out there. Fantasy Pros has some good ones. Almost every fantasy website does have trade value rankings now. And you can kind of say, hey, I was thinking this for that. Here's why. Here's where these three experts rank, you know, Terry McLaurin. They rank him as, you know, wide receiver 18. You right now are saying that you want an RB10 for him. Well, you know, that just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense for me, for you, for anybody. And so if you can show them non-biased rankings, if you can say, hey, here's why I was thinking that, you know, I really like this player. Here's where I'm helping you out. And I can show you, you know, our trade value is pretty similar. You ideally want to get somewhere where they think they're getting good value and you are getting the best player, maybe. That's why I love doing 2-for-1 swaps or things like that, where I'm giving them two lesser players and, you know, trading in for a good player. And right now is a perfect time. If a team is 2-2, they've lost two in a row, or team is 1-3, 0-4, it's a good time to say, hey, you need two starters. I have two guys that would start on your team and upgrade your flex or upgrade your RB2. And that's how I try to break down the wall. What do you think about that, Kevin? Showing, you know, what would you do if someone kind of showed you non-biased trade value rankings?
Yeah, if you send them to a reputable and, you know, mass published site, and it says like Fantasy Pros rest of the season rankings, and you can say these guys are similarly ranked. You know, I think it puts things into perspective much more quickly. And I'll be honest, I probably sent out 15 or 20 trades in our main TKD league. And I haven't done that once. And that's probably why things haven't opened up for me. You have to go out, talk to the person, text the person, and, you know, help put it in perspective with evidence. And that's really how you can bust on the wall. Totally on board.
There you go. So, you know, once again, this is kind of do what I say, not what I do, because I have not successfully executed a trade yet this far, Kevin, and neither have you. So, you know, do what we say, not what we do.
Yeah. You know, I have another worm question, but this busts out the realm of fantasy football, and it's just something that I very badly wanted to talk about, because I have a feeling that we differ on this. We're the Ravens. We were tied with 4 minutes left, ball on the 2-yard line, go for it on fourth down against the Buffalo Bills. Don't get it. Were they wrong to go for it on fourth down? Or should they have kicked the field goal, or was that the right play?
You know, I think it was probably the right play to go for it on fourth down.
Thank you.
It, you know, it probably depends on the team you're playing. For me, like, if I'm playing the Lions, am I really going to say, you know, is Jared Goff going to dagger me 98-yard touchdown drive if I don't get this? You know, when you're playing Josh Allen, as the Ravens are, you know, maybe take your points and live to fight another day. I'd say generally, though, try to plunge it in the end zone, make Josh Allen score a touchdown, not just a field goal, because with one little flick of the wrist, he's in field goal range. And so that's where, like, you know, if you're the Ravens playing the Bills and you kick a field goal, you know, probably not going to hold up over 4 minutes. If you're playing the Lions and you dagger the touchdown or even miss it, Jared Goff, I'm not worried about, you know, going 98 yards on me. There's probably a lot of other teams that would say, you know, 98 yards, I don't think they can do it. You know, if you're facing Kirk Cousins, though, the fourth quarter slayer, the dagger doctor.
Oh, my God.
The Colossus of Clutch. Yeah, I would maybe think differently. But I generally would say go for it.
Yeah, okay. I know that we agree on this, but I still want to lay out the scenarios because I saw so many tweets about John Harbaugh is on the hot seat. Ravens fans want him out. Same thing popped up last year when Brandon Staley decided to go for two. The right play was to go for it on fourth down. Why? Okay, you kick the field goal. You give Josh Allen 4 minutes to kick a field goal. Okay, now you're – that's almost certainly going to happen. So you have a 50-50 shot of winning in that scenario. If you do manage to pick it up on fourth down, now Josh Allen has to drive the field and get it in the end zone in order to force OT. You kind of take losing out of the scenario if you pick it up. If you don't pick it up, sure, you're in a tough spot. But you can't play to lose. You have to play to win. Just shaking my head still. I'm still pissed about this one. Analytics was all over this. It was an easy go for it decision. And, you know, just a lot of people don't think so. And those people are wrong, Logan. Very wrong.
Well, yeah. Vikings had a similar situation. I think they were down the 5-yard line. This was earlier in the game, so not as big stakes. But, like, 4th and 1, I think it was from the, 11-yard line or something. It's like a touchdown or even a first down in that scenario just puts the other team in such more of a bind. And at the end of the day, that's what you're trying to do, right? You're trying to put the screws to the other team no matter how. But have it be points or field position. You know, would I rather, you know, be up 3 and then have them have the ball on the 25-yard line or, you know, be tied, and but now they're backed up in the 8. You get better field position. I don't know. I'm a generally go for it guy when you're in scoring position, just because, you know, get it or not, you can generally put the screws to the other team field position wise.
And on top of all this, Buffalo drove down the field, got it to the 1-yard line, and then took a knee. Even if you kicked the field goal, and gave them even better possession after the kickoff, you know, they were still going to be in the situation to tie it with a touchdown, win it with a touchdown, or certainly, you know, tie it with a field goal. I thought how that game played out and made it very obvious that it was the right decision. But football Twitter did not. And I wanted to rant about it. Now I've had my soapbox and I'm taking it with me.
There you go, Kevin. It seems to me, I'm looking at the outline here, that you have something that you'd like to put on the board.
Yeah, I'd like to put this on the board. I know you're a diehard Vikings fan. Everybody knows that you're a diehard Vikings fan.
Skull.
And Dalvin Cook had to take him in the first round. I think that he's going to finish last out of those 12 guys that were consensus first round picks. That means he has to beat out Jonathan Taylor. Otherwise, has to beat out a bunch of receivers that have quite a big lead on him in order for me to be wrong. But I wanted to see if we could put this one on the board or if you had confidence in your guy Dalvin. Or are you going to shy away and not really want to put it on the board? We'll find something else.
You're going to have to give me those 11 other players, Kevin. That's what I'm going to make you do. Okay. Who does he have
up right now?
Who does he have to beat?
Yeah. So he has to beat 1-on-1 Jonathan Taylor.
Yep.
Christian McCaffrey. Austin Eckler. Cooper Kupp. Derrick Henry. Justin Jefferson. Najee Harris, Jamar Chase, maybe another intriguing one, Joe Mixon, Devontae Adams, or Stephon Diggs. He has to beat out one of those guys in order to put it on the board.
He beats Najee Harris. Put it on the board, Kevin.
Put it on the board. Dalvin Cook, I have finishing last out of those 12 guys. Mo says he probably beats out Najee Harris, but I'll give you if he beats out any of them. I'm leaving myself to risk of injury on all those guys, but I think this one's so safe that I'm going to put it on the board.
All right, Kevin, let's do it. Put it on the board. Dalvin Cook will finish 11th out of the top 12. Yeah, it hasn't been as explosive for Dalvin as I thought this year, but surely more explosive than Najee Harris. So that's what I'm just going to bank on.
And that's what you're banking on. But I think that's going to do it for the strategy theme episode. Any final words for the listeners out there?
No, Kevin. Really excited to get to the primer. Flex plays, write that down. Get some good questions, too.
See you there, folks.